It's hardly an original thought, but life can be, and often is, messy. Age helps us rationalize this fact, but in our childhoods, well, things are seldom ever clear to us as children, and so we depend upon our families, particularly our parents, to serve as guides. For some of us, though, families often hinder as much as they help. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101, and in this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I are going to review two films that explore intimately the process of growing up. The first is Richard Linklater's celebrated 12-year-long project titled simply Boyhood. The other is a documentary feature titled, maybe a bit too simply, Rich Hill. So don't touch that dial, because a human-themed Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga Law School.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and staff writer for the Spokesman Review.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that may be in its adolescence, but often, especially when confronted by the flotsam that Hollywood sells to us frame by frame, finds itself longing for the retirement home. I'm speaking for myself here, but I think my two trusty co-hosts can empathize. What keeps us coming back, of course, are those weeks, such as this past one, when we encounter films rich in content and or skillful in style. Not only are these films the antithesis of what fuels the mainstream movie dream machine, but they refresh our love of cinema. It's no coincidence that one of those films was written and directed by Richard Linklater, whose body of work has been, for the past two decades, quietly establishing itself as among the most intelligent ever created by an American filmmaker. Linklater's latest film, which is titled Boyhood, is the narrative equivalent to Rich Hill, a documentary co-directed by Andrew Droz Palermo and Tracy Droz Tragos that won the Grand Jury Prize at February's Sundance International Film Festival. Let's begin with a film that was a dozen years in the making. Richard Linklater makes the kinds of films that critics love to love. And why wouldn't they? In an industry that revels in superhero thrills, cheap laughs, things that go boom, and cookie-cutter sequels, he writes and directs movies that in one way or another explore the intimate intricacies of life. His latest offering is titled Boyhood, though in interviews he has admitted that the film could be called Sisterhood or even Parenthood, or even life itself. Begun in 2002 and filmed a couple of weeks at a time over the next dozen years, Boyhood tells the story of Mason, played by newcomer Eller Coltrane, in real time as he progresses from age 6 through elementary, middle, and high school through graduation and his departure for college. More than just a gimmick, though, Linklater's stylistic conceit underscores the process of growth, and not just for Mason, but also for his sister Samantha, played by Linklater's own daughter Laurelee, his divorced parents, played by Patricia Arquette and Linklater favorite Ethan Hawke, and various others. The result is nothing less than one of the most authentic looks at life ever put on celluloid. And, you know, I really do want to make the point that this film could easily have been simply a gimmick. And I want to be real careful. We've both addressed this, Nathan, in conversation, and you have in a column you wrote for the Spokesman Review. We have to be careful not to overpraise Boyhood in a way that makes people think they're going to see the second coming of Citizen Kane. This is a tender, touching, little film that is done in a way that has never been done before, that is amazingly original, but yet at the same time, if you overhype it too much, people are going to go, meh.
Yeah, there's going to be a backlash there.
There's already a backlash that's been started. Mm. Kenneth Turin of the Los Angeles Times wrote a review, and I'll give Turin credit. He owns his opinion, which I love. He didn't connect with the film, and so he couldn't join in, but he refused to review the film. He let Betsy Sharkey do it.
Although he probably should have just reviewed it. I mean, if that was his opinion, that's his opinion, and he should be.
Well, he finally had to write a piece about it, so explaining he couldn't
right.
not.
No. Right, and I guess I'm going to add to the adulation that Boyhood has been receiving. I mean, I think it deserves all of the praise that it gets. But I agree with you, Dan, that I think that if we keep, you know, praising it to the high heavens, that people are going to go in with expectations that simply can't be met. This is an intimate movie that just happens to be told on an epic scale. We've seen this sort of story told before, and we've seen it told in a similar fashion. I'm thinking of, I mean, never to the extent of 12 years in real time, but I'm thinking last year of Blue is the Warmest Color, which was a big, sprawling 3-hour film set over the course of several years that was just about a girl growing up and her relationships with her parents and another woman. And Boyhood sort of has that same intimate feeling to it. But there's something really amazing about watching these actors, because it's not just the characters growing up, it's the actors too, and not just the kid
and
the center
changing,
yeah, but also the parents too. Patricia Arquette, I think, is amazing as this hardworking single mother who just goes from one troubled relationship to another, and Ethan Hawke as this guy who's really, I think, trying to be a better father and be a better man, and just is stuck in some kind of case of arrested development where he just hasn't really grown up since maybe high school, maybe even before then. He still drives the same black muscle car that he did when he was a teenager, and that's really telling of his character. And so we're seeing all of this happen, and there are no huge events. There are no epiphanies. It's just sort of, you know, one week at a time in these characters' lives. And it's amazing to actually see these people on the screen grow up and change as they would if you saw them in the flesh, in person. And that's something that we just don't see in the movies ever. And so this is something to be celebrated. Boyhood, and I'm already calling it, by the way, I think Boyhood is probably going to be my pick for the best film of the year. I mean, this had a really intense emotional impact on me that I probably can't convey to somebody that hasn't seen it.
Well, and also you drove across the state in order to see it in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And so we give you major props for that.
Thank you very much.
I think it's an interesting look at this family life. And I guess I'm questioning why it is called Boyhood, because I do think the quote boy in the film, we see him grow up, but it's really focused on the family. I mean, I feel as though in some respects I learned more about the parental characters than I did about him, because he is a teenager and he's playing something sort of close to the vest, and he's a boy, and we don't necessarily see him having these in-depth conversations to a greater extent when he starts dating.
Well, he does, but I think one of the most interesting things about this film is that what Linklater does is what we've always preached. He shows, but he doesn't tell. Through the movie, he shows
this kid's
development, but by definition, he's a kid. He doesn't know anything. He's learning as he's going along. Some of the most affecting scenes in this film are the camera looking at him, watching his mother connect with a guy, a new guy, who we know is going to be trouble, but he's looking at them like, what's going on here? We don't know what's going on
like
in his
head.
Hope
and apprehension. I mean, we can't quite figure it out. And
so the movie doesn't offer, I think, any real answers about the human condition. It just simply explores it.
And how easy would that have been for a director to do? Okay, I'm going to make this movie over the course of 12 years.
That.
I'm going to make this over the course of 12 years, and I'm going to explore life, and it's going to be this big epic film, and it's going to be this big important statement. I think a lot of directors would have gotten lost in the conceit. And Linklater is confident enough in his own talent, in the talents
and the
of his
audience's
cast,
reaction.
And our intelligence to just kind of step back and let things unfold slowly and deliberately and sometimes messily. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an approach that a lot of filmmakers wouldn't do. And I think that's why Linklater has proven himself to be one of the great filmmakers working
I
right
agree.
Now.
His Before trilogy proves that. You know, I want to come back. This plays right into how you described Boyhood, Nathan, when you said there are no huge events. Because when we go back in our own lives and we think of huge events, but often as much, we think of something somebody said to us one afternoon in elementary school or junior high or even in our 20s.
And that sticks in your brain.
Exactly.
And why? Why do we remember that? We just do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is what Boyhood is filled with.
Well, consider
moments
this.
Like this.
Consider this. And near the end of the film, during the last chapter, so to speak, when he graduates high school, we don't see the actual graduation.
No.
We see him riding in
Thank
a truck.
Goodness.
Yeah, we see him riding in a truck with his friend drinking out of a flask after graduation. graduation. Mm-hmm. We see the awkward family conversations at the party afterward. And that's absolutely right. Who remembers their high school graduation? Everyone remembers what they did before and after, but we sort of block out that, you know, big 3-hour chunk where
we just
sat there.
Well, I remember mine because somebody pulled Ed McElroy's chair out and he fell on the ground and everybody laughed.
But see, that's exactly what I'm talking about, though. It's those little things that you remember. And I think that what Linklater keeps off the screen is just as telling as what he puts on the screen. For example, the Ethan Hawke character, he shows up the first 3 or 4 times in this black muscle car I was talking about. Then he's gone for a bit, and the next time we see him, he's driving a different car. And just the shot of that car pulling up in front of the house, the way that that black muscle car always has, says everything we need to know about what's happened to that character in the last 2 years.
And the khakis he's wearing.
Exactly. But Linklater doesn't spell it out for us. He just shows us, and we understand that this character has gone through this kind of transformation. And that's really confident filmmaking.
We cannot let our conversation about Boyhood go without talking about Laura Lee Linklater, who plays Samantha, the sister, who one of the first scenes we see her in, she's doing a perfect Britney Spears impersonation.
As a little girl.
Exactly.
Back in 2002.
And I think that that's one of the things that's very subtle about this film that gets lost is how her voice at the very beginning is strong and authoritative and she's domineering, and how it lessens as she grows up. By the time she's a teenager, she's kind of sullen, she's kind of inhibited, and that in itself, without trumpeting anything, is really the experience of a lot of women. Wouldn't you agree, Mary Pat?
No, I do agree with that. And I thought it was very realistic because then she does, we see her as she goes off to college and she's actually in college and we see her gaining back some of that confidence that we saw her have as a little girl. And the thing is, we can't really tell how much these kids are affected. And I thought one of the things that we haven't really talked about, although you mentioned it in passing, Nathan, was Patricia Arquette's performance. Because I think that she has been consistently sort of underrated or undervalued. Because this also coincides with the making of her TV show Medium. And for anybody who was an aficionado of that particular show, as I was, you could see her from her different hairstyles. I was like, oh, that's season 4. That's whatever. So that was my frame of reference for dealing with this. But I do think that here is this professional woman who has, you know, overcome all these odds to become a college professor and so forth. But yet we see her continuing to make some questionable decisions about her personal life and the way those decisions affect her kids and their relationships to one another and also to this blended family that they find themselves in at some point, I thought was a fascinating look at that.
And one of the most affecting scenes is the scene where he's going off to college and she's sitting there trying to pay bills or something and she starts to cry. Mm-hmm. But it's never really clear why she's crying. Is she crying because anyone who has ever said goodbye to children going off to college understands some of what's going on in that scene, but is it more now I'm all alone, I have no men in my life, I have no one in my life, my kids are going, I hate my life, what all? Linklater doesn't tell us.
Because we do kind of know. I think the essence of this film, Boyhood, is he doesn't tell us, yet we still know. We still understand. There are moments in this film where we don't really know why characters are doing what they're doing, and yet we sort of understand why they're doing it at this kind of gut-based level.
And because I think we've gotten to know them, in a sense.
And because I think
that
we've been in similar situations in our own lives. And I think it would have been really easy to cast, you know, sort of a precocious kind of Hollywood kid at the center of this film. But in Ella Coltrane, Linklater has found this really sort of introverted, curious, observant kid who's quiet. I feel like there are scenes in this film, which is essentially about him, where he's just sort of an observer on the sidelines. He's watching quietly as the world, you know, sort of is coming into focus around him. And that's a really interesting way to approach this.
And the film ends with him on the verge of putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't tell us.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Exactly.
This is a great movie.
Yeah.
And it's really, really rare that we see this kind of accomplishment. So.
But just go see Boyhood and make up your own mind, right?
Yes.
This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. But before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Sundance Award-winning documentary, Rich Hill. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Boyhood. Let's now move to Rich Hill, a documentary that follows the lives of three young men living in and around the city of Rich Hill, Missouri. Filmmakers Andrew Droz Palermo and Tracy Droz Tragos are cousins whose families have roots in Rich Hill, a farm community in west central Missouri. That fact is likely what earned them access to the families of three young Rich Hill boys. It's certainly what got them interested in documenting the boys' lives. 15-year-old Harley and 13-year-old Apache, spelled, by the way, A-P-P-A-C-H-E-Y, both of whom have anger issues and more, and 14-year-old Andrew, whose optimism shines through the poverty in which he, his sister, his handyman father, and his narcoleptic mother live. Rich Hill doesn't have a traditional narrative. In fact, it's arguable whether it has a narrative at all. But Palermo and Tragos have a good sense of cinematography. Whether they're focusing on a fireworks display or Apache breaking up an ice puddle with his skateboard, and they give us a view of America that tends to get lost, or erroneously portrayed by mainstream media. For that, if nothing else, Rich Hill, which opens this weekend at the Magic Lantern, is certainly worth a view.
I would agree with that, although I have to say at various points watching this film, I was thinking, I wish I were watching Rich Hill at the Sundance Film Festival, or I wish I were watching it in a different context than I was at home in our living room, because I think this is almost a quintessential film festival movie. I mean, it's such a small movie. It's a slice of life. And it's interesting that we are reviewing this in contrast to the first half of the show where we looked at Boyhood, because the lives of these kids, and they're not necessarily atypical for what's happening at various places for young people across the country, are just so bleak in so many respects. It was just heart-wrenching to watch this, because you kept hoping against hope that something, you know, good would happen to any of these kids, to their families and so forth. And I'm just telling people, don't hold out those expectations because they're bound to be dashed. And it was really challenging to watch this film. I mean, at one point there's a, and I think some of the other reviews of Rich Hill have talked about this, we find out that one of the three boys on whom this film focuses has been sexually abused by a family member. And it's just, whoa. Yeah, tough to watch. I think it really does, because it's such a small film focusing on the lives, you know, and oftentimes we're in these trailers or apartments that just sort of scream poverty or just getting by. I think that they are onto something. I don't know if they should have, you know, mixed it up just a little bit more, apart from the cinema verite approach basically that they adopt here. Maybe it would have been less unrelenting, which is, I guess, how I would describe it.
Yeah, I thought Rich Hill was like a 2-hour slow punch in the gut. I mean, this movie is really, really tough to watch for all of the reasons you said and more. I mean, just when we see the conditions that these people are living in, and it's shocking to know that there are a lot of people out there that live this way.
There are
it's
a lot
just
of people in the Spokane Valley who live like this.
Right, all over the place. And, you know, I actually just took a road trip through central Washington a couple of months ago. And, you know, you drive through towns a lot like Rich Hill, you know, that have a population of 800 to 1,200. And you drive through there, a speck on the map, from one side of the town to the other in about 3 minutes. And there are a lot of people like this living in those towns that, you know, I don't really think about. And, you know, now I probably will think differently because of this movie. At the same time, though, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it's some kind of pity party, because I think that there is an aspect in this film of love in the face of all of these horrible conditions. I mean, there's a scene where a dad is filling up a bath with water for his kid, and he's using all these different heat sources because the hot water has been, because the hot water has been turned off because they can't pay the bills. And you see little things. Those are little details that make this movie so much more than just a film that rubs your nose in poverty. But there are real people here, and there is a sense of love and community.
And I agree, and you're hitting on all the better points of Rich Hill. On the other hand, there's that title. We have a problem with the title of Richard Linklater's film Boyhood, which originally was going to be called 12 Years, but then 12 Years a Slave came out and he thought, oops, we can't do that. So he settled for Boyhood. It could have been called anything. Waking Life, which he's already used.
I kind of like the title Boyhood, though, but that's another,
Yeah. But Rich Hill, my problem was, all right, this is an aspect of what Rich Hill is, but is it all of Rich Hill? No, I think he could have come up with a much better title than that. And secondly, those of us who talk about film, you know, who've been obsessed about talking about film all our lives, we always ask a couple of basic questions. What is a best boy? What is a gaffer? What does a producer do? And I can tell you what a producer, there is many jobs, but one thing a producer should have been doing on the set of Rich Hill is every day turn to the directors and say, what is our story? I think if there's a weakness to Rich Hill, it's that it has all these wonderful portrayals, wonderful cinematography, but ultimately when it's all over, you go, a punch in the gut? Is that all this movie has to offer?
At the same time, though, I see where you're coming from, but I think it is important to show this side of society.
I totally agree with that.
To shine a light on people that, as you said in the introduction, either get marginalized in big Hollywood entertainment or get stereotyped or are completely forgotten about. And, you know, we have directors like David Gordon Green who make films about people living in Texas in abject poverty, but it's always, you know, within like a thriller plot or something like this. And this is just a snapshot of what it's really like to live, maybe not in this community as a whole, but in these particular neighborhoods and houses.
Contrast this sort of, you know, there's a parade at one point that's really rah-rah, and then there's a fair where they're auctioning off these pies for
$3,000.
So that was fascinating. The one thing that I really admired about this film is you could see that there was some relationship between the filmmakers and these boys, whether it's the fact that they were
excited
excited that somebody was paying attention to them at long last. But I thought that they got very good reactions in ways that you would not anticipate from kids in that age group.
It's a fascinating movie. And that was Rich Hill. We can't close this week without making mention of Robin Williams, whose death seems to have affected most everyone in some personal way. My Facebook page has been filled with testimonials to how much Williams and his comedy, his television shows, his stand-up performances, his movies meant to people.
Yeah, you know, celebrities pass all the time, and it can affect you in one way or another based on how their work hit you emotionally. But this particular death, it hit me sort of hard, and I was kind of blindsided by it. I didn't expect to have the reaction to this that I did. But Robin Williams was not always my favorite actor, wasn't in nothing but great movies. I mean, there are a lot of clinkers on his resume, but he was rarely ever the worst part of his bad movies. And I think even when he was in a bad film, you could always see him trying to bring something to it, to try and salvage it with his own energy. And he was just a force, you know?
I walked into class yesterday and my students told me about his death and they were profoundly affected by it. So the cross-generational nature of how he appealed to people. And we just recently watched Good Will Hunting again, and that really is a masterful performance.
Yes.
And so, as everyone has been saying, he will be missed.
Yes. And that's our show. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the films Boyhood and Rich Hill. Let's take a moment to thank Patrick Clausen for both producing and engineering the show. And let's thank you to our loyal listeners, as we invite you back next week, same time, same spot in the radio dial, when we'll again navigate the world of contemporary cinema so that you don't have to. Until then, remember, as anthropologist Margaret Mead once said, it is utterly false and cruelly arbitrary to put all the play and learning into childhood, all the work into middle age, and all the regrets into old age.